Spring camp is officially underway. We are now in the Mike Norvell CEO era. Baseball crushed the Canes in game one of the rivalry series. And of course, we're going to talk about the great Tallahassee lockout as Mike Norvell closes practice to the media for the first time during his tenure in Tallahassee. What's up, Noll Nation? I'm Jesse from Plant the Spear, and thank you for joining me. We have a lot to cover in this episode, and I'm excited to get into it. Football is officially back, and so while practice is closed, we do have some things to talk about here, as well as baseball. You know, it's a big bounce back so far. Now, they still got a couple games to go in the series, depending on when you're watching this, but a lot of ground to cover. Michael is not with me today, so you're going to be rocking with just me, so I appreciate you guys tuning in. And so with that being said, let's jump right in. Now, let's start with the news that dominated the headlines earlier this week, and that is some thoughts on FSU deciding to close practice this year, which was a complete 180 from what they've normally done under Mike Norvell. And, you know, this was really kind of burning up social media earlier in the week, and there's a lot of varying opinions that have been put out about it. And I know it's maybe a little bit older news now, but I haven't had a chance to share my thoughts on it yet. Now, I did write maybe a little bit of an editorial style article on it that I put up at the website. If you guys haven't checked that out, you can go see it at plantthespear.com. Maybe some of you already saw that. And do check back with the website periodically, because sometimes we have to record based around our schedule, but I am able to publish some articles over there. So anyway, let's jump into that. Now, after last season and the way things went, look, we all wanted change, and that's exactly what we're getting. Florida State overhauled this coaching staff. They brought in a bunch of new players, and now they're closing practice, which is just another way of change, another part of the change in the way they're going about their process. And, you know, Mike Norvell has always been somebody that has allowed open media access. And so I think that's why this was kind of a shock to the system for some of the people that it affected. Because, like I said, it is a 180 from what he has normally done since he's been at Florida State. But I think this is something that we have to remember, and this is something that applies to everybody in everybody's life. When something you're doing stops working, it doesn't hurt to switch up and try something new, try something different. You know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Now, I'm not going to say that the media was responsible for a 2-10 season or anything like that, and we're going to talk more about that later. But I think at the end of the day, When you're really in the midst of kind of overhauling, renewing everything that you're doing, it doesn't hurt to kind of touch every facet of what you're doing. And I think at the end of the day, the approach that I take to this personally here at Plant the Spear is, don't we all just want what's best for the team? Isn't that ultimately what's the most important? Because in my opinion, winning games in the fall is far more important than watching practice in the spring. I mean, you're talking about 15 spring practices. We already know the first two have only been in helmets. They're just doing install, you know, a lot of different things there. Not a lot to watch there anyway. Now, of course, this will probably carry over into the fall, because if you're closing spring, you're probably going to close fall practices as well. And I think realistically, when you talk about the decision to make this move, if Mike Norvell is tasked, whether you like him or not, if Mike Norvell is the guy that's tasked with running this program and he thinks this is what's best to help this team win, then I think we should support that. You know, and if the other coaches are part of this decision, which has been a rumor out there, then who should Mike Norvell kind of side with in this decision anyway? His new coaches, as you try to build that continuity, as you try to rebuild this program, or the media? I think that decision seems pretty obvious there. It certainly doesn't hurt to eliminate distractions. When you talk about, it's really for just a few hours per week at practice, you're still getting post-practice interviews with coaches, players. You're still going to get to watch at least one scrimmage this spring. And so it doesn't hurt to kind of block out the noise for a few hours a week, come together as a team and focus on a unified goal, right? I mean, we already live in a time where there are unlimited distractions. I mean, you have a cell phone in every hand. Social media is a news cycle that never stops. And we've even heard with some of the player interviews, like Cam Davis talked about, this team saw, the players saw things that were said about them and talked about them on social media last year. So, you know, I know like back in the day, Jimbo Fisher could have that no social media policy, but you got to be kind of friendly with the players on your team nowadays from a fact of making them happy. And so shutting off social media is probably not something you can really do nowadays. And so the distractions are going to be there. So if for just a few hours a week, you can eliminate that, I think that's a positive. And I think one of the big points to understand here is that besides the fact of whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, and most people do, Alabama's practices under Nick Saban were pretty much closed to the media. When you look at a Georgia and Ohio State, I went and did some research on these. They have very, very limited viewing periods for the media. And realistically, those three programs have won 10 national titles since 2009. So it's pretty hard to argue with the system that they run. And so if this is like maybe them taking a page out of their book, modeling it after those programs, that's not a bad thing, because that the success is just really hard to argue with. And you know, if this was, say, maybe even a Gus Malzahn influence decision, that influence of knowing what it takes to get to a national championship, because he's done it before, and you may think his success is further in the past, but he was there as a coordinator. He was there as a head coach. You know, I thought that influence of knowing what it takes to get to the top of the mountain was something that he would bring to Tallahassee, because he has seen it before. So either way, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I think from multiple perspectives, right? And I think part of that is this move makes sense in an era where tampering is at an all-time high. I don't think that teams are necessarily like reading practice reports to get an inside track on their opponents. But we are in probably one of the most ultra-competitive times in college football with basically unlimited staffs. Why wouldn't they? So, I mean, if you could get a read on who's a guy that you need to watch out for, or maybe some of the things that they're talking about, then I don't really think there's a benefit of giving free information to the competition, especially when it's during a time that there's a lot of change happening in Tallahassee with new coaches, with new players, with new systems. You know, you kind of do get a little bit of the element of surprise going into the Alabama game. And, you know, it's not really a huge deal anyway, because you weren't allowed to report on injuries. You weren't allowed to report on some of the scheme things that they were doing anyway. So you're really just kind of getting tea leaves from, you know, the one-on-ones and who's winning drills and who's not. And, you know, there's been rumors that those are things that can be fuel for tampering, right? A team hears about this guy does really good in practice maybe. And so they're like, hey, why don't you come, you know, we got a spot for you over here if you're not going to play over there. So I think this is, it's smart from kind of multiple perspectives here. And you know, this, again, this is why we're seeing a move across the country of spring games being eliminated. And so I think, you know, again, the tampering, the modeling it after successful programs, and just kind of having that element of surprise this year when you are making a lot of changes, I think those are the reasons that really heavily support this, right? And whatever they think is going to be best for the team, that's what we support here. And now I know there's the counter argument of like, yes, they won games before when the media was there. And no, I don't think this had any real effect on the success of the team or going 2-10 last year, because they went 13-0 with the media at practice. So I don't think it makes a big difference there. I think some people are like, oh, you're trying to, you know, hide things and whatnot. I don't necessarily think that's the case, but I will say, because there have been varied opinions on this, like I mentioned, but I do think from a personal standpoint that it does add some pressure to perform in the fall, right? I mean, if you go out and you make this move and you shut the doors and you shut everybody out, and then you go 4-8 or 5-7, this move is going to look kind of frivolous in hindsight. It's going to look kind of like a silly move that maybe you were trying to hide something. And, you know, for full transparency, some of the media members that didn't agree with this move probably aren't going to pull any punches, you know, if things do go south. But at the end of the day, I don't see this as a bad thing. And I do, from, you know, just the reading the room of the social media posts that I made about it and getting some of the comments and seeing some of the things that were said, I do think most people understand this and most people support the move. Some others didn't handle it so gracefully. You know, and on a side note here, I think we have a unique perspective at Plant the Spear, right? Because we are fans and we are kind of media members at the same time. Like, I can sympathize with the media who are just trying to do their job. And I get it. This is a major roadblock to what they do. You know, you're going to kind of have to go old school here and kind of read some sources. And truth be told, like, they still put out some injury stuff that I know they're probably not supposed to report on anyway. So, I mean, you know, and then you look at some of the things that they did last year where things went south and they put out some things that just weren't positive about the program. And so, like, hey, I kind of understand locking them out in a way. And to be fair, like, I always do my best to try and never talk about other outlets out of a professional courtesy because, you know, no one is perfect. We're all trying to do this job. And technically, this is something that is going to affect all of us. I mean, we aren't credentialed here at Plant the Spear. We are not at practice. But this is going to affect us too because, yes, technically they are, or should I say were, kind of our eyes and ears on the ground per se. So their information did help us. You know, and like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I have some inside sources when I don't. You know, we have to rely on what we've seen on the field, what we see in the practice videos, what we see from practice reports, what we hear from the coaches. Those are the things that we have to rely on. You know, I've only been to one FSU practice in my lifetime, and it was when I was 16 years old and Bobby Bowden was still the coach. I didn't even know what a podcast was back then. And, you know, maybe that's a story I can tell you guys over the summer because probably second best FSU kind of experience I've had as a fan in my lifetime. It was awesome. But, you know, I live 7 hours from Tallahassee. I live in around Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't go to practice anyway. And I know some of the other media guys don't anyway. And I don't think they meant harm last year, or I don't think they meant to be wrong. You know, sometimes when you see bad versus bad in a vacuum, you don't really realize it until you see it against someone else. And I think that's kind of maybe a little bit of what happened. You saw, you know, this against that and neither was really good. And then it kind of got exposed when you started playing other teams. You know, there's 1,000 reasons why Florida State struggled last year. But I do love the new idea that's being floated around of like teams having mixed practices, you know, with other teams. Like Dion talked about at Colorado, and Fran Brown kind of embraced that at Syracuse. I even saw something I haven't had a chance to watch the interview, but where it said Mike Norvell wasn't opposed to that either. And so, like, that's something that I would like to almost see, like that kind of NFL style mini camp between two teams where you have co-practices. So you can see what this looks like against, you know, against other programs and whatnot, you know. And with that said, they did watch practice every day and they still got a lot of it wrong. But so did a lot of other people, you know, and a lot of people love to kind of harp on them for that. But Nick Saban got it wrong. NFL scouts got it wrong. You know, and no one's playing like I'm not up here to play the world's smallest violin for the media by any means. The only reason I bring this up is that I just, As a Florida State fan at heart first, right, I don't like the way some of the outlets handled it. You know, there were a couple of hit pieces that were wrote about this, and I don't think that was the way to handle it, right? That's not the approach that we took here. But at the same time, you know, again, I think maybe that's what people don't love the media anyway, right? And they don't always love the beat that covers Florida State. And I'm not here to have an opinion about them one way or the other. You know, there's a reason I started Plant the Spear, if you're kind of reading into what I'm saying there. And so, you know, with that being said, I do admit that we were wrong about things last year too, right? I mean, I'm relatively new to this. We started in 2022. I love FSU, so I'm always going to err on the side of being positive. For one, you know, I did warn about, I thought the schedule was a lot harder than it, you know, people gave it credit for last year. I mean, I'm out here warning people about Memphis and Cal and things like that. And, you know, Michael's has one that always joked about, like, you know, man, you're warning about every team. I'm like, because I think they're better than we're giving them credit for. You know, I saw a situation where we could go 8-4 last year. No, I didn't see us going 2-10. You know, but at the same time, like I said, I didn't watch practice. You know, and at the same time, when you're talking about how you deal with this moving forward as a media outlet, and we're, you know, obviously as we try and bring you guys coverage for this, it just means you have to work a little harder, right? You have to dig a little deeper to try and find out the information that you need to know. And that's kind of always the way that we've done it here. Like, not going to practice, I know last year wasn't great for any of us, but it didn't stop me from predicting every single game outcome correctly my first 2 years of doing this. You know, the 2022 season, I thought we were going to lose to Wake, Clemson, and NC State. Wake was depending on Sam Hartman, whether he was playing or not. You know, I went on an LSU radio station in 2022 and I listened to a lot of what they had to say before I went on, and they thought they were going to dog walk Florida State. And, you know, I kind of walk up in there, my very first radio appearance, very nervous. And I'm like, I think Florida State's going to beat you guys in the Superdome, you know? And so it's just because, you know, and I thought we were going to go pretty much undefeated in 2013 after I saw that first LSU, or excuse me, 2023, after the LSU game there. I thought maybe we might lose to Clemson until I saw them play and us play. But the point of it is, like, that's because I do put in a lot of time, right, and a lot of research, and look at the stats and look at the numbers. I spent hours taking notes for every episode. You can ask Michael, like, he's seen my notes before for every episode, and he's like, my goodness, dude, slow down a little bit here. Calm down on it. I, to be honest, I rarely ever listen to coach or player interviews because it is kind of hard to take what they say at coach at face value. And I know that you guys feel the same way going into this year. One common theme that I've seen in a lot of comments is basically like, man, I don't want to hear about it. I just want to see it on the field because you said all these things last year and look at the way it panned out. You know, and that team shouldn't have gone 2-10 last year. I mean, Darius Washington was an all ACC type of tackle. He had been an all ACC player before 2024. Patrick Payton was an all AC, was the ACC defensive rookie of the year at one point. We had seen a lot of those guys perform individually, but when it came to a collective sum of the parts without some of the big pieces, like seeing Patrick Payton without Jared Verse, like seeing the O-line without Jordan Travis back there. And then you add in the hangover of the snub, the poor evaluations that led to the bust in the portal. That's just what we ended up with, man. And you know, no one saw it coming. But to kind of wrap this up, because I'm not here to, like, I'm not trying to make the sound like I'm crying a river for planting the spear, right? Because, you know, we never had access to be taken away to begin with. So we're going to keep doing what we do. It's just, this was a huge talking point. And really my point of all this is that, like, I do have respect for those in the field that cover this team because it is a lot of work. You know, once I started this, I thought it would just be kind of, hey, let's turn on the mic for an hour a week. And it's a lot more than that, right? It's a lot of time, commitment that you have to put into this. But I think the one thing is that's important is the different stance that we took, right? And how I feel like this should be viewed by a lot of people as not so much like what this takes away from me, and I'm talking about most of the other media members that didn't agree with this, or even the fans or whatever that thought this was a bad move. I think it's more of, if they think this is what's going to help them be successful, then that's what we should be putting our support behind. Because at the end of the day, all we want is for this team to be successful. You know, I think that is one thing that makes us different at Plant the Spear. And I'm not here to toot our own horn, but I think realistically at the end of the day, you know, me and Michael and Jeff and, you know, when you look behind the scenes here, we care about the success of this team more than anything else. We are boosters. We are season ticket holders. We are Battles End members, you know, and technically we're media members too, I guess, if you want to call it that. And 2023 was one of the best and most enjoyable seasons of my life, right next to 2013. You know, I was in Doak a lot of Saturdays. I was at the ACC Championship, you know, up until the day after the ACC Championship. 2023 was absolutely a season I will never forget. All the post-game podcasts talking about wins and all that stuff. 2024 was downright miserable. You know, coming on here, having to talk about loss after loss after loss. This team can literally practice on the moon for all I care, as long as I don't have to go through another 2-10 season, which I'm sure is something you guys agree with there. So I'm fine with it. You know, all we want to talk about is wins in the fall, even if it means we don't have much to say in the spring. So, you know, if it helps the team, we support it. And that's really kind of my thoughts in a nutshell there on them closing the practices to media. So, you know, we're going to do what we can to move forward. I don't know what the coverage is going to look like. We're going to kind of play it day by day and go with what we got. But, you know, again, I appreciate you guys rolling with us. And hey, look, we got a top 10 baseball and top 10 softball team to talk about anyway to get us through the spring. So, you know, we're going to tack on some baseball content. I know you guys have said that you liked it before. I know it doesn't, you know, drive the numbers like football or anything, but I love talking about that baseball team anyway. So, with that being said, guys, let's go to the next segment here, which is some of the Some of the takeaways I have from the coaching interviews as we talk about Mike Norvell entering his kind of CEO era here. And before we do that, I want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Roback. Now, Roback has elite gear. They have a couple of pieces that they've rolled out for FSU that are really slick. You've got some polos, some quarter zips, some hoodies there. And I have a Roback hoodie and a Roback polo, and I absolutely love it, especially when it's hot down there in Tallahassee for those early fall games. You know, it's that real dry fit material. It's great stuff. So make sure you go check it out over there at roback.com. You can find the Florida State stuff listed there, and make sure you use 20% off your first purchase by using code SPEAR. So we appreciate you guys supporting those that support us. So let's talk about this Mike Norvell move to being the CEO. Now, this was something that we knew about coming in to this year when he hired Gus Malzahn and basically said, look, I'm going to hand you the keys to the Corvette. It wasn't a Corvette last year. It was more like a Pinto. But I'm going to hand you the keys to the offense. Let's just leave it at that. But I like this move, right? I think that, and the reason I talk about it now is because it sounded like in his introductory press conference pre-spring that he's kind of more embracing this role. Like it's not going to be, I'm going to be, you know, kind of do this and do that. Like I'm going to be overseeing everything. That's his department. Tony White's doing his thing. And, you know, I'm just going to kind of be the overseer, the CEO. And I like this move, right? Because I think nowadays with everything that's going on in college football, you know, we're seeing so many coaches leave now because of just so many things that you have to manage. You know, you have to re-recruit your roster every year. You got the portal to look out for. You have the on-field aspect. You have recruiting. You know, you have NIL that you got to manage. There are so many things that you got to have your hands in as a coach that I think you almost have to take on the CEO role now. You almost have to embrace that. And I think when you look back to last year, he was the play caller without having a real OC, because we know Atkins was really more of an OC in title only. So I'm sure most of the preparation of the offense, all of the play calling, that fell on Mike Norvell. And especially when things start to spiral, when you're so hyper-focused on that, that you aren't able to give or split or have the time to spend giving proper attention to everything that needs attention, like effort and, you know, trying hard in practice and trying hard on the field and things like that, then things can get out of hand. Things can get away from you. I mean, you know, when the offense is on fire, you don't see the 100 other spot fires that are popping up around you. And I think that just added insult to injury last year. And of course, yes, it did work in 2023 because he was the play caller and the offensive coordinator there, Kenny Dillingham, had already departed there for Arizona State. But when you look back to 2023, you basically returned your entire starting offense, including Jordan Travis, who was essentially a quarterback and a coach on the field. He could kind of help you out there. He had a lot of freedom in play calling. He knew the playbook inside and out. And so I think that's why it worked so well in 2023. But then when you lost that continuity, when you lost that quarterback there and you had a new guy who had to come in, that's kind of what one of the reasons we saw it fall apart in 2024. And, you know, I'm sure that the snub hangover had a lot to do with Mike Norvell. And, you know, he probably needed a mental reset in the offseason. I mean, you know, we think about how bad it scarred us as fans. You know, a lot of us don't trust the game anymore. A lot of us lost a little bit of our love for the game when that happened. And so I think, you know, think about how much that weighed on Mike Norvell, the guy who had to kind of deal with it firsthand. And so there was some distraction in the offseason, right? And I mean, we saw that show up in poor evaluations and things like that. And to be truth be told, you know, again, I said we were going to be a little candid in this one. You know, if we're being honest, I don't think that last staff around him was really great enough to allow Mike Norvell to take his hands off the wheel and lead the offense and really hyper-focus on that offense without having to manage other aspects like the effort, like the evaluations, like the things that, you know, we talked about. And I think a good example of that is like Dabo Swinney at Clemson, right? Whether you like him or not, he's not really coaching squat, right? I mean, he's the face of the organization. He's a CEO. He's a great example of a CEO type of coach. And like I said, whether you love him or not, he's still a great recruiter. He's still a great CEO of a coach. He's fired some coordinators. He's made some of those changes. Some may be a little late, but some he got rid of some guys Some moved on their own, but he's managed to keep that program successful. Now, they haven't been as successful as they were after they lost the title run coordinators with Venables and Tony Elliott. And I forget the other guy's name. They were co-offensive coordinators there. But that shows you how good, how vital those great coordinators are, right? And I don't think that you had that in the last staff. And I also think that when you look at them, they have been able to maintain success at Clemson because they have some of the most talented rosters year in and year out in the ACC. They've also benefited from their direct power competitor, Florida State, being down the last few years. I mean, when FSU rose up in 2023, they didn't make the ACC title game. They lost to Florida State. And that's not something they've had to deal with since, you know, they've kind of had that little fall off period from after the 2018 title, the last title they won, up until, you know, now. And so I think that that has a lot to do with Dabo being able to focus on recruiting and bring in the talent and put out those spot fires, right, that we talk about here with Mike Norvell needing to do last year. And so I think that's where he'll benefit the most from being a CEO, is being able to, you know, he can still be involved in the game planning. He can still say, hey, Gus, these are some things I'm seeing. These are some things that I would like to see the offense do. But he can be involved in every aspect of the program. And I think that's very important. And, you know, to be fair about this, Nick Norvell is not Nick Saban, right? He's not to a point where he has such a system in place, such a foundation in place, that you can literally replace half your staff or both your coordinators every single year and things just keep rolling. But nobody's Nick Saban, so that's fair to understand. He's still kind of young in his career, and they're trying to build that. You know, and again, like I said, to be fully transparent here, I do wonder a little bit about Mike Norvell in the CEO role as a guy who hasn't recruited at an elite level, or a guy who hasn't been to a title game yet. Now, obviously, he built the 2022 and 2023 teams. He took Memphis to the Cotton Bowl. He knows how to coach. He knows how to build a team. And frankly, if Jordan Travis doesn't get hurt, and if ESPN and the committee doesn't kind of collude to screw Florida State, probably has a national title under his belt. So I'm not selling my stock on Mike Norvell. I think this is a good move for him. I think it's going to be ultimately beneficial in the long run there. I think he'll be better in this role than trying to do both. Just like I think Gus Malzahn will be better in the role of just being an OC rather than trying to do both like he was at UCF, which is something that he talked about when he came here. You know, he said, look, that's just a lot. And he wants to get back to calling plays and being hyper-focused on that offense, which is what what he's good at, right? Because, again, there's just so many things that you got to have your hands in as a head coach nowadays. You know, and he did talk about having conversations in that press conference with some of the guys and meeting them where they're at. And some of the other things that he said really does kind of indicate that he now acknowledges that he lost the team last year. You know, you couldn't say that in the midst of last year when you're still trying to pull things together. But this was kind of one of the first times you heard him admit that maybe the culture had fallen apart. Maybe you had some guys who were a little more me than they were we. They were playing more for the name on the back of the jersey than the name on the front. And, you know, that became a problem when we saw those things fester and get worse over the course of the season last year. So now he can focus on trying to rebuild that, trying to meet with all of these players and establish that standard and know who's committed and who's not. And when you look at the culture, that was such a big part of 2023 because that roster had a lot of talent, but it punched above its weight class. And a lot of that had to do with the culture that they had built, the buy-in that they had from all of those guys. And so if you can rebuild that, that's going to be a big part. Everybody pulling in the same direction makes a huge difference here. And, you know, I think when you say things on both sides of the coin here, I do want people to understand that, look, I want Mike Norvell to be successful. I like him as a coach. I think he's a good coach still. He didn't forget how to coach when he got here. I think it's also best for the university that he is successful. I know some people don't feel that way and they just want him gone. And, you know, I'm not here to tell you how to feel as a fan or whatever, but I'm a fan of Mike Norvell and I want him to do good because he is our coach and it's best for us to not have to pay that buyout and change staffs again. But that's why this is such a big year for him this year. You know, when you look back to last year, like I mentioned before, I know how terrible I felt after the snub and after the Orange Bowl and how all that stuff went. Imagine how he felt. That wasn't entirely on him. Now, 2024 was on him. So that is the blame does not fall free of Mike Norvell. That is for sure. And that's why I say I don't think that closing practices is trying to hide things that he knows this team is going to be bad or anything like that. Again, they were just as guilty of setting false expectations as the media was. I mean, he was the one, you know, that said this was the best offensive line he's ever had. And we know that was pretty far from the truth. But I think this is a really big year for them, a big prove it year. Because of what happened last year, like you had things rolling at the end of 2023 and some things that happened out of your control that had literally never happened in the game of college football before, it happened and it cast its shadow over last season, right? And so you didn't handle it well and it went bad. And now you have that cloud hanging over you and now you have to get that stink off the program. And I think that's what they're really trying to do this year. And that's why this year's so important. If they overachieve and win 9 or 10 games, because, you know, most of us are falling in that like 8-win kind of window there. If you win 9 or 10 games and you compete for the conference title, I think they're off to the races. I think you're going to see the recruiting pick back up. I think, you know, you're going to see this thing get back rolling like we've seen in the past because you do learn from your mistakes. They're not going to make the same mistakes they made in the past. You have a better staff around you, or at least so we think as of right now. With that being said, if they underachieve and they go 7-5 or less, maybe 6-6 or 5-7, let's keep it real, guys. They're going to have an uphill battle going forward. Because if you think back to the early part of his tenure here at Florida State, they had the talented guys on campus. I know that didn't work out for us, but they had Marvin Jones Jr. On campus. You know, they had all these talented guys on campus, and they missed on them. And a lot of that wasn't just because of Mike Norvell. That wasn't because of NIL. It was because the state of the program at that time. It was a complete kind of dumpster fire, and kids wanted to jump on a moving train. And, you know, of course, some of it was NIL, some of it was other things, but a lot of that had to do with the state of the program. So this is why this season is so pivotal for Florida State is, you know, if you overachieve, I think you're back rolling. But if you underachieve, man, it's going to be hard to overcome the stigma that is on this program after last season and the coaching staff. You know, they had a top 10 class probably after 2023, but it fell apart during 2024. And so we'll never know, but they had the best class coming off of 2022 that they've had here in Tallahassee. So they never really got a chance. And again, most of it's from their own doing, never really got a chance to sell that success. So if you can get that part back, I think you're going to be fine here, but it's a big year for them. And so I think Mike Norvell embracing this role is important. I think it's good to see that he is willing to kind of try something new and do something different. Maybe that was forced. Maybe it wasn't. But, you know, college coaches are pretty headstrong individuals, right? And so the fact that he's willing to adapt and kind of take on this role, I think it shows a lot of growth as a guy who's still in pretty young in his coaching career. Now, some of the other things that I saw in the pre-spring takeaways here, one of the things I just want to mention, because I don't want to go through every single one because some of you guys have probably already watched this, I think my favorite new coach of all of this new staff is Herb Hand. I mean, watching it's like going to a football clinic when you watch his interview there at the pre-spring luncheon. Just such a knowledgeable guy. Said they had put in a lot of mental work leading up to camp. One of the things I loved that he talked about was, you know, it talked about the mix of the levels of experience that they have and how when you talk about cross-training these guys that your job is to make sure you have your 5 best players on the field at all times. And that's not always something that we saw under Alex Atkins. It didn't feel like we always had new pieces coming in, new pieces swapping. There wasn't a whole lot of continuity. I know some of that had to do with injuries and things like that, but I was just very impressed with some of the things that he talked about schematically wise. Some of the things that he talked about from a physicality standpoint about, you know, you can't be physical in the game if you aren't physical in practice. And so I'm really excited to see him turn around this offensive line, see what he can do with this offensive line. You know, I saw the video of Michael Pettis walking into practice and that is a mountain of a man. So I'm excited. I think he's like 3 or 6'7", 360. So I'm excited to see, you know, what he can do with this offensive line, but I'm loving Coach Hand so far. And I really do think that what he's able to do with the offensive line is really going to determine a lot of what this season looks like, because that's really what just killed us last year. And so we do have spring practice to talk about now, as we kind of move away from the pre-spring topics. there are two of the 15 practices in the books so far. Now, again, we know they're closed to the media there in Tallahassee, so we have to rely on what the coaches have given us, the breadcrumbs that they've laid out for us after practice. And so far, there's not a ton to go on because, as we do know, both days have been in shells. That's helmets only. But the pads do come on Saturday. I'm recording this on Friday, depending on when you're watching it. Today is an off day for them. But, you know, the pads come on Saturday. And so that's a big day. That's when things start to go live. That's when you start to see the physicality ramp up and things like that. And some of the main things that they've talked about over these first two practices is with 30 plus newcomers and six new coaches, you know, there's going to be an adjustment period of just people getting used to each other, people getting in sync and making practice flow smoothly. That's part of just being a big change. That happens with any staff around the country. And it sounds like most of the first couple of days were heavily focused on just kind of everybody feeling each other out, everybody getting back in sync, everybody kind of, you know, getting their footing and getting practice structured how they want it. Working on the install was a big point of emphasis over the first 2 days. Mike Norvell said they really did try and do as much as they could over the fall and the off season to try and get ahead for the spring, because, you know, they're putting in a new offense, they're putting in a new defense. They got so many new coaches and new players to get up to speed that you want to be as far ahead as you can and take advantage of the spring. You don't want this to have to be getting back to the fundamentals and things like that. I mean, of course, they're going to work on that. But that really install and getting up to speed is one of the main topics that he talked about there. You know, I'm still interested to see what the physicality level looks like in practice once the pads come on. But I do think we have already started to hear about some seeds of change. And a lot of that came out of Cam Davis's interview, because he was pretty candid. You know, he didn't really hold back on anything there. He talked about the difference in practice, and he said, you know, hey, nobody's standing around. No one is BSing. And he didn't say BSing. He said, we're a family-friendly show, so we're going to leave it at that. But he said practice is very serious. And he did talk about the work that they put in during the winter period and how it's helped them be better prepared for spring. So, I mean, I'm not going to talk too much about the practices before, because we weren't there to really see it from our perspective. But some of the things that we saw that did come out on the videos, you know, we didn't necessarily love. And so I'm hoping that this is something that is just kind of a new approach to practice. You know, some of the things that we heard from back in the day with kind of like a Jimbo Fisher practice was that no one was standing around. You know, everybody was at work the whole time they were there. And so that's something that I look forward to in this practice. Now, some of the other things that Mike Norvell said in the post-spring practice interviews there, one of the things he said that has been a common theme here now, but this is something that kind of catches your ear, right? He said that he thinks he has the best OC in college football. And when they were kind of the context was talking about handing the keys over to Gus Malzahn. And, you know, he said, look, hey, I think I have the best offensive coordinator in college football. And that's something to be said, right? I mean, that's kind of calling your shot there. And so that is, you got to kind of be willing to stand by that when you make that kind of comments. Now, I'm interested to see how this plays out, because he also, like I said, he also thought he had the best offensive line he's had in Tallahassee during his career, and they were downright pretty much terrible. For me, I think Gus will be better in the offensive coordinator role here. And most of you guys know that I'm a full-time first responder, and I work in the medical field. And in the medical field, we have a thing called evidence-based medicine. And basically what that means is you go based off evidence. You go off what works and wasn't and what doesn't. I'll believe in what I see, right? And I'll go off of what I've seen work in the past and not necessarily what I hear after last year from coach speak, because coach speak is just that. It's coach speak. A lot of times they're not going to throw guys under the bus. They're not, you know, they might say some things here and there to challenge some guys, but they're going to be building these guys up. And that's something that they've done and throughout the spring with talking about some of the guys. But like I told you before, I don't really listen to a lot of coach interviews. I just don't, because they're almost pointless, right? I mean, you can get some things from them, but you just don't know the truth of the matter of what you're going to get. You know, I mean, apparently we had a good offensive line last year and DJU was a great quarterback. It didn't work out. And so I know a lot of you take that same approach, right? Where you're like, I'll believe it when I see it on the field against Alabama. I know Michael feels the same way. You know, we've talked about this before, like when it's all you have to go off of, right? That because there is no other outside forces looking at this. This is all you have to go off of. there may be some things leaked from sources that other outlets and stuff like that have, but this is what you got to go off of. So you do have to pay attention to it this year. But the proof is in the pudding, and that's what we're waiting to see, right? We're going to see whether the things that they say hold up in court, right, in the fall during game day, compared to what how it went last year. And so that's kind of where I'm at with these coaching interviews. Like, I'm going to listen because it's all we got to go off of, but let's see how it translates on the field. But that doesn't mean we can't take away some things from what he says, right, because it is what we have to go off of. And one of the things that he talked about that I do like is seeing Jalen Lucas make a return to the field. And this came unsolicited. When he opened the press conference, it was pretty much the first thing that he talked about. And talked about how he looked explosive coming back. And you know, of course, they're managing his workload because he is working back from a season-ending injury that happened against Boston College very early in the season there. But putting coach speak aside, this is what I talk about when I said, based on what I've seen, right? Jalen Lucas was a bright spot for the offense last year, and there weren't many, and it was a big loss when he left early in the season after that Boston College game, only the second game of the season. The proof is there with him, right? So getting him back is big. So this is something that I'm looking forward to seeing him back in the rotation, because in a very limited sample size, you could see it from him. I mean, he averaged 6.5 yards per carry and 13 yards per catch over the first two games. I think he led you in yards per carry at the time he got injured. And so he's put in a lot of work to get back. And that's going to be one of the pieces that I think are going to be really big for you this year. You know, it's almost one of those that kind of gets forgotten about because he came in, he only played in two games, and he left for the entire season with injury. And so I think he is going to be another guy that can be a game changer for you if he stays healthy this year. So excited to see Jalen Lucas back. That's a good positive report to hear. Mike Norvell, another thing, was asked about Daryl Jackson and James Williams. These were two big names that me and Michael talked about on this show leading up to spring and some of the things that we were looking for, because these are guys that you need to be impact players on day one. And Mike Norvell, one of the things that he said there was that you can feel their ownership and the leadership that they're putting forward, and said that they are challenging them and pushing them because they know that you need guys like that to be the experienced leaders to step forward and lead this team. And, you know, they told, one of the things that he said that I thought was interesting was he said he told Daryl Jackson not to come back unless he thought he was going to be a top 10 pick, unless you plan on putting in the work and embracing those high expectations. You know, he said, unless you're willing to put in the work, it's just talk. And that has really been one thing that has been a big part of the narrative in this pre-spring part of practice, and even through the first two practices here, is building that confidence by speaking it into existence, which is something that we talked about with the whole Gus Malzahn and saying that he thought he had the best offensive coordinator in the country. You know, I know some of us are going to roll our eyes at that, but I think positive affirmations are a real thing, right? I mean, if you're telling Daryl Jackson he's going to be a first-round pick, if you're saying that James Williams will be ready to enter the NFL draft early after this season, you know, I think those players, when you empower a player, right, and you tell, and this is something that you can see in your job every day, not even just college football, but like if someone tells you, you know, I think you can be a leader, I think you can be in this position, you're going to start being like, you know what, maybe I can do these things. And so I think there is something to that. Now you got to go back it up. And if you don't perform, again, it's just like closing practice. It's going to look silly in hindsight. But at the same time, like I don't think it's a bad thing to have that kind of attitude, you know, saying that you're going to repeatedly saying that you are going to have the number one offense in college football this year. I don't know that I believe it, but I don't think that it's a bad thing to have that confidence, because confidence is important, right? And creating that edge is important. And I think they can be good. We'll wait till it plays out on the field during the season. But, you know, again, that's something that Cam Davis talked about that we alluded to earlier, in where they saw the things that were said about them on social media. They saw the things that the fans aired out and the frustrations and the talking heads said about them last year when they were struggling. And they said they know it was an embarrassment, not only to them, but also an embarrassment to the university because of the standard that's been set here at Florida State. And you know, you got to go back it up. But I'm not mad at holding yourself to that high standard at all, right? I think that's... it's a good thing. Now, you're going to, again, look silly if you don't back it up, but I don't want guys that are come in and be like, hopefully we can have a top 50 offense. Hopefully we can win seven games. I want guys that are out. You know, Jared Verse was a guy that was very confident in himself and talked about the goals that they wanted to reach. And so and they did. And so I think that's an important part as well. Now, some of the names that have come out in the post-practice interviews here, one of the things to watch that he was asked about is who's stepping up at the safety position, which is a position that we have a few question marks about going into the season with Shaheem's absence, because Shaheem is a guy who's going to miss most of spring. Conrad Hussey is also a guy that's going to miss most of spring. So you have some reps that are up for grabs here. And Earl Little Jr. and KJ Kirkland were two names that came to mind for Mike Norvell there that was mentioned by him. You know, Earl Little Jr. was a big one. I'm going to call him Michael Norvell, but, you know, my co-host Michael, he was someone that said he wanted to see what Earl Little did, you know, stepping into that position, because he was very physical last year and he got some playing time towards the end of the season. He did a lot better when he translated over to the safety position. Now he's got some experience. That's a guy that stepped up. KJ Kirkland is a guy that got some burn last year that I think is going to have a really good chance at kind of filling that starting role there. So those two guys are guys to watch. He says he wants to see Ashlyn Barker take the next step here. Also talked about a young guy, Max Redmond, standing out in some reps there. And so I think you're empowering the players there. But, man, if you could get something out of KJ Kirkland and Earl Little Jr. alongside Shaheem Brown having a bounce back year, you're going to feel a lot better about that safety position, because then you have, you know, and especially if Ashlyn Barker comes along too, you have three to four guys to add some depth there over the course of the season, especially if you're, you know, you're looking at running a 3-3-5 defense or something like that. Now, the other thing that came out that was kind of talked about on social media and things like that, and even talked about in Mike Norvell. Now, he didn't name names initially in the press conference, but then FSU media did put out a clip of it, so we kind of got clarity on what it was. But he talked about response, right? And responding to adversity, which is something that his team was pretty terrible at, frankly, last year. And mentioned that a wide receiver had a pretty bad drop, but then turned around and responded with one of the nicest looking contested catches that you'll ever see. And of course, like I said, Florida State put out a clip of it. And of course, you can go find it on social media if you want to watch it. It was a nice catch, man. I mean, it was a very impressive catch. And he used his size to his advantage. And that was encouraging to see. And, you know, at a time where we're kind of looking at what we're getting out of these players, this is what you want to see out of Deuce Robinson, right? Being able to use that size. And some people will look at like, oh, well, you know, what about the DB? Every time somebody does something good doesn't always mean somebody did something bad. I think the DB was in good coverage there and was in good position. Maybe had a little hold on the jersey there early in the rep. But, you know, it's hard to cover a guy who's 6'6". And, you know, there was some interesting reactions to this clip, right? Some people were like, oh, he's not that fast. Oh, he can't, you know, he can't create separation and things like that. And it's like, look, man, people have to understand that when you're a 6'6" receiver, that's not your game. You're not trying to be a burner on the field. That's not what Johnny Wilson was. That's not what Kelvin Benjamin was. You know, I mean, when you look at the size that is how you create your advantage with a very wide catch radius, right? You get in position to box that DB out, and then, you know, you have the large catch radius where they just physically can't contend for the ball with you. You think about the Kelvin Benjamin in that 2013 national title game. They didn't throw that end zone pass to win the national championship to Rashad Green, a small, speedy guy. They threw it to Kelvin Benjamin, not because he was fast, because he had a massive catch radius and he could just basically moss, as you know, if you watch the NFL shows, he could moss a dude. And so that's what you're going to see from Deuce Robinson. So it's good to see that he knows how to use his body. He knows how to leverage that size. He knows how to win those contested catches. You know, the speed that creates separation is something you're going to see from a Squirrel White. That's something you're going to see from a Jalen Lucas. Using your size, that's Deuce's department. And so that was encouraging to see there. And I think for what it's worth, I did see a clip where Deuce Robinson hit 21 miles per hour in a game last year. So he's not slow. I think Keon was somewhere around like 21, 22 miles an hour clocked last year as well. So, I mean, the guys, he's got some wheels once you get him. You know, game speed is different than 40 speed, right? And so it's nice to see Deuce coming along and using his size there. Now, I think one of maybe the almost equal takeaways from that clip, and the reason that I'm even really spending so much time on it here, was what a freaking dime of a pass that was. And it's hard to tell who threw the pass in there, but I put my detective hat on and I put it in the video editor and I slowed it down to a frame by frame rate. And you could tell it was Thomas Castellanos. You could see his arm sleeve on in a throwing motion. He was the only, I went back and checked, he was the only quarterback that was wearing an arm sleeve that day on the walk-in videos. And so that's encouraging to see. I mean, he put that ball in a bucket, right? All Deuce Robinson had to do was kind of put his hands out, use his size. And, you know, we talked about that with Castellanos' downfield passing ability, about how I think it's better than some people give credit for. And so, you know, it is nice to see that, you know, when you see those nice passes, you're like, all right, well, who threw it, right? You want to see that come from the guy who's going to be your starting quarterback. And it did. So that's nice to see there. Which, speaking of, Mike Norvell did talk about the quarterback position. And he did talk about the great dynamic in the quarterback room, said that the older guys with Castellanos and Brock Glenn, they do push each other and they push the other guys around them too. You know, Brock Glenn had that blue jersey, the turquoise jersey in tour of duty. I don't think he's going to start. I mean, I think he's pushing for the starting job, but I still think it's Castellanos' job to lose. But, you know, the more competition that you have, the better, right? I think that's what you want, because last year when you came in, I think you knew it was DJ's job, which didn't really turn out that well. So I think you just want to have that competition. You want to not have a guy get comfortable and think he can just kind of slack off. You know, that's something that Jordan talked about when they had some competition there at the position where guys were pushing them. And so I think that's good to hear about. Now we'll see how it plays out over the course of spring and into the fall. Because like I said, I still think Castellanos is your day one starter there. And he did even mention Kevin Sperry, the young guy, the freshman coming in, impressed in 7-on-7, completed his first 4 passes in a row. So that's just encouraging to see, because right now, until we get a quarterback commit for 2026, you know, Sperry is probably your future down the line. And so it's nice to see him start off with a good spring camp as a freshman there. Cam Davis was another one that was talked about, obviously. Talked about his body composition over the offseason, kind of reshaping that. He talked about how he learned a lot as a freshman, and now it's time to take that next step. You know, he had an okay season, right? It wasn't impressive, but you saw the flashes of why he's good. Remember, he was transitioning from a quarterback position to the running back, so there was some aspects that he had to learn of the game there, but he got a lot of playing time, and he was playing behind a terrible offensive line, right? So that was with no real pass threat. So that was, it's hard to judge what he did last year, but it's something that you want to see, and he talked about that too, about now being prepared to take that next step. The other thing that he talked about was, that I thought was very interesting, was someone asked about like the other receivers, not the Deuce Robinsons, not the Squirrel Whites, right? What about the rest of the guys? And he was asked specifically about Jaylen Brown and Hakeem Williams. And he said that, look, it's time, right? You need to put it together this year, which is true. He's not wrong. And I like that he kind of calls them out and puts the pressure on them, because, you know, Hakeem is a guy that has all the potential in the world. And we've really just kind of been waiting and waiting and waiting. And like, when is this going to take foot, right? I know last year had a lot to do with the other pieces around him, but like, when is this going to take off? You know, he was a consensus 5-star coming into this program. So you need him to be good. You want him to be good. So I like that Mike Norvell is challenging some guys. And again, guys, you know, as I get ready to wrap up this segment of the show, just remember, a lot of this is coach speak, right? And so you got to take it with a grain of salt, but it's what we have to go with. And so I'm interested to see. I'll be interested to see when that scrimmage happens that the media members do get to watch, because, you know, at least then you'll get some third party reporting, whether you think it's good or not. You will get that. But to overall kind of wrap this part of the show up here, some of the main themes that I've really heard Mike Norvell talk about through the first two parts and even in the pre-spring press conferences there is just player ownership. And that's so big, right? And that goes hand in hand with leadership, which is another thing that has been heavily talked about, because we saw how much it hurt this program, that team, should I say, last year, when you just didn't have it. And you brought in a lot of high-level guys that have played at big programs and played in big games at those programs that have experience. You've got guys that are coming back that have been, you know, maybe not leaders in the past, but they can step into those roles now. This is what you need from this program, because he talked about how it really does have to be player led. You know, you can coach all you want, but it starts by being player led. You know, if you're not holding each other accountable, especially during the times when the coaches aren't around, there's only so much they can do, you know? And so I think it is important to have that player ownership. Responding to adversity is another main theme that I've seen talked about here. And I think that's big too, because, you know, you saw how in 2023, when they lost Jordan, they responded to adversity. When they got down in some games, you know, they responded to that adversity and they learned how to overcome that. And last year, they frankly did a terrible job of that. So that's something you have to build. And that comes through culture. That comes through the leadership. That comes through the player ownership as well. And then really bringing back that edge is the one thing that keeps getting talked about. And so, you know, again, that's something that maybe a question about why it was lost last year, but you got to get that back. You got to get guys that play violent, that play physical, and a lot of that's going to start in practice. A lot of that starts with the coaching and again, being player-led in the leadership there. And then the growth, you know, that's something that you want to see from the players you need to step up, because you did bring in a lot of transfers, but at the same time, you need some returning players to step up too. And some of those guys are young, so you want to see that growth from year one to year two, from year two to year three. And so that's the things that we're watching for as well. So like I said, to wrap up the football part, two practices into a 15-practice spring. They are going to be putting on pads on Saturday, so now things are going to start to get real, right? That's when things get real. It's no more easy days, and they're going to be going to work. So it's going to be interesting to see the things that do come out of practice, the reports and things like that from the coaching staff, and who kind of starts to separate themselves and how things go. So, yeah, man, we're, you know, getting into it. You do have actual football to talk about, even if we can't really watch it firsthand. But what we can watch firsthand is the last segment of the show, and that is baseball, who put absolute belt to butt against the Hurricanes on Friday night, which was awesome to see. Obviously, you love winning games, but it's just sweeter when it's Miami. Florida State takes game one in this rivalry series, 14-1 in run rule fashion, ending the game in seven innings. The bats came alive, and that was important after the Mercer game on Tuesday, where the bats really fell silent. Six home runs in this game, 14 hits, 14 runs on 14 hits, six home runs. And that was huge to see. It was so nice to see the response by this offense here. And that's something that Link Jarrett talked about in his post-game press conference. He said he was really proud of the response. And he's, you know, Link, he's a straight shooter, man. He tells it like it is. He said Tuesday was a really tough night for this team. He said it was not a pleasant trip down to South Florida because of the bad taste that they had in their mouth from that loss. You know, and he talked a lot too about how it was a short turnaround week. And so to see them respond, he was very proud of that, because, you know, sometimes when you take a bad loss like that, it's easy to kind of get inside your own head. But, you know, again, man, it's baseball. It happens. You know, he talked about how Joey Vellini, who's been excellent on the mound for Florida State, was in control of the game, you know, and how a lot of the teams and the members of the team and Vellini himself overcame the emotions in a rivalry game like that. You know, talked about how the transfers have been for them. And so that, you know, it's just, you got it right. And you got to get guys that mesh well and can make an impact. And you've seen that with a lot of the transfers that they brought in this year. Miles Bailey still continues to absolutely crush the baseball. So he is so fun to watch, man. He's just really got to work on some consistency. But that kid is absolutely unreal for a true freshman. And, you know, Hunter Carnes was big last night for them as well in game one versus Miami. So you got some real freshman impact players here. But, you know, the thing is now, for me, I'm still a little bit concerned about the quality of some of the bats, which is something that Link Jarrett talked about, right? He talked about how he is concerned after some of the quality of the at-bats he saw after that Tuesday game, which is something that I share. When you look at back at what they did against Florida and what they did against Mercer there on Tuesday, because those were two of the better pitching staffs that they've seen so far this season. You know, this team has shown that they can feast on some bad pitching. You know, they ate Boston College, that pitching staff, alive. They put up a lot. I think it was, you know, I think it was like 28 runs on 40 hits or something like that in a three-game series. And then I think it was five runs on like nine hits in the other two games that we just talked about, Florida and Mercer. So you still got to get consistency against the good pitching. Miami's pitching is not bad, but it's not great. Boston College is literally dead last in the ACC in ERA. Miami is 12th, so not much better, but it's better than Boston College. So it was good to see the team respond and the offense come alive against Miami last night. Now, depending on when you're watching this, Saturday night is Miami's kind of best pitcher. It is their ace. But at the same time, you know, we're going to see. It's not like what you're going to see against Florida State, right? But it's, you know, we'll see how they respond on Saturday night. But, you know, when you talk about that Mercer game, because that was kind of a topic of contention this week. Look, baseball isn't football, right? Teams don't go undefeated. The same night we lost to Mercer, three other top 25, maybe even four other top 25 teams lost to smaller schools. You had Texas that lost, Wake Forest that lost. Of course, we did. Number one, Tennessee, which was the last remaining undefeated team in the country, lost to East Tennessee State, Etsu there. It's fair to be disappointed, right? And I was too. I posted on social media about it, and some people kind of confused being disappointed in a loss with not understanding that it happens in baseball, because it does, right? But there's no use in putting stock in losing one game here and one game there. I mean, this team is still 19-2 right now. That's just baseball, right? We lost to Mercer last year, and we're still one of the final four teams standing in Omaha. So that game is just a blip on the radar. Baseball is not about going undefeated. Baseball is about being good enough to get into the postseason, hopefully getting a home regional and hosting a regional, and then getting hot at the right time when the postseason comes. So I think when you look at what happened Tuesday and the things that Link talked about, and then you look at what happened in game one against Miami, you can't ask for a better response than what we saw. And kind of goes the same way with what we saw with Florida, right? They lost that game. It was disappointing. It's a rivalry game. You never want to lose that. Of course, Evan Crest was out. You didn't have your starting pitcher in that game, but your midweek pitcher. But then they responded against Boston College in a big way. And so that's really all you want to see, is them being able to put those behind them and respond in a big way. So let's see how they finish out the series. Let's see if they can get this win in the series. Maybe they can even get the sweep here. That would be really nice. It's always great to sweep a rival there. I mean, you know, again, the two losses that you're talking about here were midweek games, and those are just different, man. This weekend rotation is an entirely different animal to deal with. This is probably, I would say right now, easily the best starting three trio of weekend rotation in college baseball. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. You go out there and you get shut down by Vellini on night one, which I know they will eventually rotate back to Jamie Arnold being your Friday night starter. But now you got to deal with Jamie Arnold. And then you got Wes Mendez, who's technically, by the numbers, best of all of them. So even when it turns back to Arnold, Vellini, then Mendez, that's a 1-2-3 that you don't want to have to deal with. That's a bad day at the office for any opposing offense. You know, you just have to be able to have the bullpen hold the line. And you know, they struggled in that game against Mercer. But I think at the end of the day, the point is, you've seen the response, right? You've seen it against Boston College. You've seen it now against Miami. Let's see how they close out the rest of this series. But you have to trust Link, and you have to trust the process. You know, we've seen him turn this program around from a dismal first season to a Omaha team, a team that made it run deep into Omaha, and now they're still a top five team this year. So trust Link, trust the process, and let's go out and kick some more cane butt the rest of this weekend here. Because again, you know, here at Plant the Spear, we fully support throwing down the upside down U there. So man, just really proud of them guys. 14-1, belt to butt whipping there for Florida State in game one. So that's going to be it, guys, for this show. Wanted to talk about some football action that we had going on, and also talk about this baseball team. You know, obviously we're going to be covering the baseball team more in depth. I was hoping to do a preview for Miami this series, but I just kind of ran out of time there. But as ACC play ramps up, as the teams get better, as the schedule progresses, you know, we're going to talk more about baseball, because I just love talking about this baseball team. And so make sure again that you check out plantthespear.com. We have written articles over there. We do a preview for as many baseball series as we can. We had like an 1,100 word preview for the Miami series. I don't know that you're going to find more in-depth baseball previews than you can find with us there. And also, you know, we're writing football articles and stuff like that too. So make sure you check out plantthespear.com, our website there. And, you know, we'll stay on top of as many shows as we can. Drop a like and subscribe if you enjoyed this content. We are now less than 50 subscribers away from 2,000, and that would be a massive achievement for us. So we appreciate you guys for making this happen, for making it possible, and for spreading the word. Rate and review on the podcast also helps us reach other Noel fans. So thank you guys so much for watching. Looking forward to the next show. And, you know, Michael should be back for the next one. So always love our back and forth banter, and love talking with him about Florida State. But in the meantime, guys, enjoy talking with you. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.